You know, we keep hearing about the rise of the warrior cop. I just wonder how much longer the citizenry will put up with abuses and so forth. There is occasional blowback from the actions of the few. The actions of the few that prejudice the good work of the many. I just hope it doesn't result in the rise of the warrior citizen. Now that could be a problem, don't you think? Let's change gears here for just a second. I want to keep you updated on what's going on over overseas. There's an interesting little app you can get for your iPhone or your Android or whatever, and it's called Safecast, and it's a radiation monitoring app. And so I said, yeah, okay, let's take a look at it. And interesting, colorful spectrum all over Japan. It's a really interesting, a very cool little app, and I think you'll like it. Here's something that'll pique your curiosity. Mysterious black substance flew all the way to Tokyo area from Fukushima 10 days after first explosion. Since then, they've been shrouded in horror. Here's a quote. Everyone here looks somewhat damaged by the radiation. A nuclear expert says, disgusting that Fukushima's corium hasn't been located. If melted fuel burned to center of Earth, it'd be nice. That gets rid of it, right? Burns to center of Earth, impossible to retrieve all of it. FDA import alert. U.S. bans agricultural and fishery products from 14 prefectures in Japan due to Fukushima radionuclides. Top newspaper, concern over contamination is spreading to most countries around Pacific. One more. Gunderson, Arne Gunderson, he's been on the program before. 200 brand new fuel bundles in Fukushima Unit 4 pool are most at risk to start nuclear chain reaction. If too close together during removal, there will be a criticality. They have to be very, very cautious. All right, one more. Fukushima mother's plea to UN. Children and adults are suffering tremendously. Sharp increase in bloody urine, bone pain, and more. Doctor says many have similar symptoms with unknown causes, and family's health deteriorated all at once. Recovered soon after moving. I have been woefully remiss in staying in touch with you over the Twitter device. Now, we do Facebook. You go to the Coast to Coast AM Facebook page, give it a like. Hit a landmark of, 250,000, I think, something. And and my Coast to Coast AM John B. Wells page, it's the public figure page. There's two, three of them up there anyway. We're a little bit over four, but that's okay. Just one guy, not a whole crew. Don't anticipate having 200,000, but if you want to cruise by there, it's a good way to voice your opinion, check out a few interesting memes. And, you know, sort of get it on verbally, or, well, not really verbally, but speech-to-text conversion. Also, the Twitter thing. You can tweet at me. I'll tweet at you from Caravan to Midnight. So check it out. We'll all be twits together on Twitter. Yep. All right. Right back after a little two-minute pull over to the side into the pit. Change the tires, get back on the road with William B. Scott, his latest book, The Permit. Interesting discussion with him tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. We'll be right back. Okay, Bill Scott, where we left off, I believe, was there was a judge had a little domestic violence problem of some sort, and the problem just went away.
That's right. And, of course, he was appointed by the coroner to oversee our inquest hearing. A lot of the inquest stuff is covered in the permit. Obviously, it's fictionized. None of the characters in there are real people. Yes, some of them approach certain people. You know, everybody knows that Wynn Steele is sort of my avatar. But as I tell people, that Wynn Steele is a whole lot bigger and better than I am. And most of the characters are composites of any number of different people. But rather than dwell on the specifics of the real inquest hearing, I'd suggest people just take a look at the book.
You know, People don't like, some people out there don't like it when I refer to scripture, but it's funny. In 2 Timothy 3:13, you know, evil men shall wax worse and worse. So, I don't know. It's like somebody said one time, gee, it's good to be king, but there aren't very many that didn't just indulge themselves in abuse after abuse. I suppose it's just human nature. And having discussions like this on the program, I heard somebody say recently, I don't even remember where I heard it, but medicine isn't easy to take. You just take it if you really want to get better.
That's right. I think we will need all kinds of medication, if you will, to cure this problem of domestic terrorism that I call indigos, and that's just a term I made up to refer to this new class of domestic terrorists that we talk about in the book. And in essence, you can think that these killer cops are really no different than any other domestic terrorists. They are the sleeper cells that are embedded in our society, and they are killing more Americans than Al-Qaeda did on 9/11. Since 9/11, cops have killed more Americans than we lost on that modern day of infamy, as you said earlier. But obviously in the book, we use fictional methods and fictional weapons, too. And if you like, give your listeners a little overview of that, if you want, John.
Oh, absolutely. Give them all the teaser that you want without giving it away, because it's once you settle into this book, you're going to want to stay with it for a while. Just
yeah, permit. Let it rip. It's a fast-moving techno-thriller novel, and you gave a pretty good overview earlier. I'll just kind of run through some of this stuff. It starts off with a bizarre killing of a covert federal agent that's assigned to Checkmate. And Checkmate's a black ops government team. It is, because it's black ops, nobody knows it exists, right? And it's super-secret cadre of assassins, and they're charged with tracking down and exterminating sleeper cell terrorists. And they use high-tech weapons that are designed to instill fear, doubt, division among the enemy. So after Eric Steele, this Checkmate agent's gunned down by indigos in Las Vegas, his teammates are immediately tasked from the top with neutralizing this new breed of domestic terrorist. And it's a tough job, because this particular type of terrorists, the indigos, they're protected by powerful political forces that answer only to mafia-controlled hotel casino billionaire there in Las Vegas. Fictional, of course. So when a sniper tries to take out the dead agent's father, Winsteel, Checkmate agents immediately initiate an aggressive campaign that is designed to take out what's previously has been these untouchable indigos. The Checkmate's a powerful force of shadow warriors, and they employ deadly tactics that the targets can't conceive, and they use futuristic weapons that the terrorists can't even begin to comprehend. But they're designed to instill this fear, doubt, and division. For instance, one of the weapons is a biological agent that literally causes indigos' bodies to burn out from fatigue. They use missiles fired from drones, and these missiles have little nanoparticle warheads that absolutely devastate human tissue. And this same drone, I use something called a Gremlin drone. It's a remotely piloted aircraft flown from our favorite place there in Nevada, Groom Lake. But the drone can fly over Nevada or over Las Vegas, and it can beam down these magical signals that create a ghost in the target's bedroom. And this particular ghost happens to be of Eric Steele, the one the cops kill. And but it's tailored to where only certain people can see the ghost. So we use some pretty good high-tech stuff to do that sort of thing. And then, of course, we have to have a really highly classified fighter aircraft flies out of Groom Lake, and it's set up armed with T-Rex, and it's a cataclysmic electromagnetic pulse system that does some pretty amazing things to certain targets around Las Vegas. That's just a little sample of some of the high-tech weapons that we use in the permit to take out some of the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. You know, this I just got an email here that may grab you a little bit. I'm just going to say my spouse is a 20-some-odd-year law enforcement officer, says all you need to see is one briefing meeting before the shift starts. You can spot the bad ones by body language, attentiveness, and the open disrespect for the process for senior officers. Why most senior officers are retiring, including my spouse. Now, that's strange.
It's scary, too, John, because what that really means is we're getting more and more, a higher percentage of the killer cops, of the 13ers, populating police forces, because the good ones, the older ones, they're those that are there for the right reason, they're bailing out. And, you know, just last year, I think it was over 30 senior, you know, 30 plus year cops in some cases retired from Metro. Some of them retired early. And I heard from one that said one reason he retired was, he said, I'm scared to death of these young ones. And he actually had a situation that, you know, should have been very straightforward, talked down some kid that was bipolar, was acting strange. And yet the young ones rolled in behind these more senior cops who were just talking to the kid. And they started blasting away and they killed the kid. It was an absolute travesty, absolutely no reason for it. The senior cops said they fired right past them, the senior cops, to kill this kid. And then, of course, the claim was the kid was coming at him with a knife. No, just wasn't there. There was video from a security camera that proved the cops totally lied about that, and there was no reason to do it. So the young ones are literally scaring the older, more professional cops. And the professional ones, just as your listener said, are retiring. They're bailing out. So a situation that is already bad is just getting worse across the nation. And we talk about that in the permit. And the permit is not just about Las Vegas. It really talks about the entire nation. And, you know, one of the reasons that Checkmate starts its program of instilling fear and doubt in the enemy terrorist group is because if they don't convince local police forces to get rid of their killer cops, to get rid of these corrupt thugs that are out there brutalizing civilians and killing them, and, you know, one of them did they killed my son. If they don't stop that, exactly what you said is going to happen, John. At some point, there will be a trigger. It could be a situation not unlike my son's murder that will irritate enough citizens to where 80 to 100 million Americans who are armed could rise up. And what are they going to do? They've had it. And will they start cop hunting? Will they start hunting policemen? And that's not good. That's the first step towards anarchy. Part of the reason I wrote the permit is to make a lot of people aware of exactly that possibility. And it's not far-fetched. You would not believe how many people have approached me and said, man, if it was my son that did that got killed, I'd be hunting the guy down. Well, I'm not going to do that. That's not what I do. And my belief system is such that, you know, I have to face karma too. And I'm not going to go out and kill the guys that killed my son. However, I do see the tendency, and we're moving in that direction nationwide. And there are many, many other factors that build into this. It's not just revenge. I mean, we have some really serious things happening. Again, Chapter 10 of the permit talks about what happens when you have a police force that is bad enough, has a high enough percentage of bad rogue cops, that the citizens start hating cops. And what happens then? They don't report crimes. That's exactly where some of these Mexican gangs are getting a foothold in the United States, and they're
That's a real good point, Bill. You just keep rolling. I'm all attention.
And it's happened. They're already in Las Vegas. They're in Oklahoma City. They're in Southern California. So now, when they see any city where you have a batch of bad cops that people hate, they get in there. So now you have bad cops and the Mexican gangs basically waging war against the citizens. So what's going to happen when people wake up and realize what's happening to them, to their loved ones? Are we going to have a backlash? That's one of the cornerstones of the permit. The Checkmate guys and their bosses at Department of Homeland Security are very worried that the nation could explode in armed revolt if they don't get a handle on this. So the Checkmate guys go out and start very definitely taking out these indigo terrorists, the bad cops. But they do it in such a way to instill fear and doubt in the police force and in a political structure that tolerates them. So the message of the book, very simply, is politicos in every single city, state in the nation, you better get a handle on these killer cops and on your thugs, because if you don't, third parties will. And in the book, that third party is Checkmate. And they go around and, through some pretty slick ways, take them out. But what happens if citizens decide to do that? That's what the book says. We've got to stop this. We have to get police departments across the nation to wake up. And instead of having the blue line that just locks arms and says, I don't care what my brother does, it's okay. He's a cop. We're going to defend him. No, you can't have it anymore. The good cops better step up. The leaders better step up. The city councils, the county commissioners had better step up right away and immediately hold accountable these killer cops and the thugs, whether it's in Fullerton where they beat a kid to death and then lied about it, or whether it's in Las Vegas where they murdered my son in broad daylight and then lied about it and just, you know, blatantly covered it up. One of these days, somebody is going to start hunting cops. We don't want that. I don't want that. What I want is to make sure we as citizens, and especially our leaders, start holding these brute cops accountable. And it goes right back to what you talked about earlier, the militarization of police forces. We're attracting guys that want to get out there and shoot, kill, and bust heads. Every little burg in America now has a SWAT team.
Oh, yeah.
It's gone crazy.
They're starting to use SWAT teams now routinely to serve a felony warrants. That's not necessary.
That's ridiculous. But the feds have caused this problem as a result of 9/11, as a result of the Patriot Act. In order to, quote, fight terrorism, the feds have pushed down on the order of $35 billion to local first responders. So every little burg says, I've got all this money. What am I going to do with it? Well, I want a SWAT team too. So SWATs have just exploded all over the United States. And Radley Balco, who writes for the Huffington Post and others, just has a new book out. It's an excellent book, you know, called The Militarization of America's Police Forces. And there's a subtitle. And he talks about exactly that. I wrote a little springboard off that for the American Center for Democracy, their Economic Warfare Institute newsletter called Militarizing U.S. Law Enforcement.
Let's stop right there and take our break, because we have to. Militarizing American Law Enforcement. We'll pick it up right there when we come back. All right? William B. Scott's with us tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go anywhere. Just stay where you are. Carrie sent an email that said, I believe policemen are rapidly losing our trust and respect. I know people who stopped at the scene of an accident, and all the cars that stopped to help were given a DUI test. So we're supposed to look the other way and not care about our fellow man? Awful. That's true. Let's just remember to keep a discerning eye. Because you can spot the good ones from the bad ones. You can. And there are many more good ones than bad ones. But you know that old adage about the one bad apple spoiling the barrel. And there was that deal recently about the up in Toronto. There was a guy who was clearly disturbed, and he said, "You're a bleeping bleep." And this policeman was, I don't know, maybe 15 meters away from him, just started shooting at him. Well, he's been charged with first-degree murder, and he will be convicted. And by the way, the other policemen that were standing around while this officer just shot this guy on a bus just over and over and over again at quite a long distance away from him just kind of hung out like it was no big deal. I'm thinking zero tolerance works both ways. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. William Scott, I just have to ask this question. I don't mean for this to be insensitive in any way. Were there allegations of any kind of drug use or any kind of something wrong with your son, which somehow justified this ridiculous act that was perpetrated on him?
Yes, there was, and that's a classic Las Vegas Metro police tactic. They always try to disparage and assassinate the character of the victim to imply that, well, this was just a scumbag guy anyway, and, you know, citizens are better off because we killed him. So, yes, they made a very big deal of the fact that my son was on painkillers for, you know, he had a broken back. He had 40% of his L5 vertebra broken off. It was broken when he was jumping out of airplanes when he was in the Army and got his jump wings. But because he was so strong and lived in the gym, his spine stayed aligned for all those years until he had a little fender bender that displaced the alignment of the spine. And then he had just, you know, debilitating pain until he found a good pain management doctor there in Las Vegas that understood what he was dealing with. And he was on 3 pills a day and was able to function normally. Well, the toxicology report that the cops came up with made a huge deal of the fact that he was on this. But what they totally overlooked, and in the inquest hearing never even mentioned, was the fact that this particular type of painkiller would have a calming effect. And yet they tried to paint the picture that it caused him to act erratically. So everything that you may read in the media about my son acting erratic in the store is absolutely patently false. We have found and identified a young man that was in the store just before Eric was, who was inebriated or under the influence of something. This gentleman caused a ruckus back at the pharmacy, and he was almost a dead ringer for Eric, the same height, almost the same weight, similar hair color, and eye color almost the same, ruddy complexion. So after the fact, I believe, they tried to convince witnesses, especially they briefed the Costco employees, that this other guy was really Eric. So the guy with the gun was the guy acting crazy in the store. But Eric was not under the influence of any substance at the time. Eric was murdered because he had a BlackBerry in his hand and the cop screwed up. You mentioned scripture a while ago, John. I'd just like to insert here that throughout the permit, at the start of each chapter, I have a little quote of some sort. And oftentimes I do use scripture in there. And there are a number of spiritual elements through the book. I don't know if you picked up some of them as far as you've read or not, but I would like to state that I feel like this book was given to me. I was told to write it. And a little vignette, 2 days after Eric was killed, I was on my way to Vegas. I got the news while I was at a writer's conference in New York, so it took me a while to get home, packed up, and head for Vegas. By then, I was getting enough intel and feedback from the media and some good reporters in Vegas that I knew that it was pretty clear the cover-up was well underway. I didn't know exactly what had happened yet, but as I'm driving across Vegas or across eastern Utah, I was just overwhelmed by the enormity of everything that I was going to have to deal with and that my family was facing, and the senselessness of Eric's murder. And at some point, just out of frustration, I said, God, this is way too big for me. Over to you, sir. You've got the stick. I'm in the back seat. Use me as you will. And I felt this enormous, amazing calm that descended over me. Outside, everything was the same. I describe it in the book. You know, the road looked the same, still shimmering in the heat waves, and just stretching off to the horizon. But something, a really calm bubble surrounded me, and I'd only had that one other time in my life when I had to jump out of an airplane. And in that next 30 minutes to an hour, the entire plot line of the permit came to me. It was all there. I do feel that it was given to me, and I felt like, here's your mission. Go do it. I confess that I was very skeptical. What good is a fiction book going to do to combat the kind of stuff that I knew I was going to be facing? I ultimately call the cartel of corruption that runs Las Vegas. But now I understand. The permit is in print. It's out there as an e-book. And it is the first in a series that some people are calling a new genre, call Justice Through Fiction. Well, what is Justice Through Fiction? It uses a good story wrapped around the facts of an injustice. And then those who promulgate and perpetuate the injustices meet their comeuppance. In the permit, Checkmate is the vehicle. And they use their very cool weapons to take out the bad guys. And justice is delivered. Well, there are many, many injustices across the globe. So this particular line or series of books is going to take on more and more of those. There's another one already shaping up. It'll have a Las Vegas connection, but it also has a Groom Lake connection out there too, a Colette Black Aura. But this Justice Through Fiction, I think, is a very powerful tool to send a message to those who are causing the injustices. In my case, they're killing innocents. They happen to be domestic terrorists, small percentage of police officers out there that think they're above the law and that they're untouchable. Not so. That's the message of the permit. That's the message of this entire genre, Justice Through Fiction.
That's excellent. You know, there's a lot of, man, I bet we've gotten, 900 emails here in the last, since we started talking.
Well,
it's unbelievable. I bet. Quick question here. Now, where is your book available?
In hard copy. The book just came out in July in hard copy, and it's available through Amazon.com and through the publisher, PygmyBooks.com. It's also out there as an ebook at Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, the iBook Store, any number of ebook retailers.
All right, I got an interesting email from a friend who's now out there in Arizona, in Sedona. Tanks, two, are sitting at the police station in Cottonwood and have been for a while. The Arizona Rangers are having mandatory drills with the police, I was told by a Ranger friend. Russian troops on U.S. soil, quote, in case of mass cosmic event. Curfew on kids by 10, which has been standard for years. It's 10 o'clock, where are your children? But your kids here in Arizona will be put in jail. Martial law, feels like it. I hope the real oath keepers stand together in truth and love of what this country was really built on. If not, it's bleak. Getting prepared. thanks. I'm your friend, you know? And you know who you are, friend. So, yeah, it's, I just heard a deal about some Texas state troopers, call them the Department of Public Safety, but they're the state police, released 20 illegal immigrants on the guys, on this guy's land. Just let them go. And, you know, there's this girl up in one of the large metropolitan areas, all right, it's in Dallas, up North Dallas. This guy just dumped a magazine into this girl. She had, you know, she was suspected of having some drugs on her. But, you know, so what? I mean, people are taking drugs. Just did a story on this last night. This stuff called Crocodile with two K's in it and no E at the end.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's like flesh eating. I mean, parts are falling off and all of this. It's like, okay, well, this is what happens if you do drugs. I mean, the Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention talking about speed going, you know, rot your liver, rot your kidneys, rot your mind, cucaracha. And everybody thought, yeah, because, you know, back when I was in my 20s, there might be some hippies waving a joint around or something. But if anybody brought any actual, you know, drugs around, like cocaine or anything, they'd just be looked at like, you know, what's wrong with you? I mean, we just kind of want to participate in the revolution, just listen to some music and, you know, get a case of the munchies. We don't really want to do any actual drugs. It was like, oh, God, if there's drugs involved, then the pistols have just got to come out. And this moron dumped a whole magazine into this girl. And, you know, I don't... It just makes me sick, okay? It really does.
Police officer said... for a backlash, John.
And you know, what the hell is this... this Russian troop stuff over here. And the Department of Defense just ordered 600,000 AK-47 magazines that hold the 7.62x39 round, not the frontline rifle, which is 5.45x39.5. And I'm just wondering now, who are these magazines for? I know. They're for the Russian troops that are already here.
I think you meant Department of Homeland Security, right?
Yeah, that's right. What did I say?
Yeah, you said the Defense Department.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
That's a huge deal. That's a big deal. And a lot of people are wondering what that's all about. You know, Mayor Bloomberg in New York, he likes to refer to his police department proudly as his private army.
Yeah.
How many private armies are we generating across the nation that we call police forces that, you know, all have their SWAT team, they're all very militarized, they all have their MRAP, armored vehicles, and they're being armed with thousands and thousands or millions of rounds of 223 and 7.62 ammo. You know, and you say, what is that for? Well, believe me, citizens are taking note of this, I think, and the cops are arrogant enough. Especially the rogue cops are so arrogant, and the leadership in places like Las Vegas are so arrogant that they think nobody's noticing, and I think they can get away with it. They think they've got the system covered, but when it all goes to pieces and the nation descends into anarchy, and there are citizens out there that are just as well armed, and they're there for one reason, and it's to hunt cops, a lot of good ones are going to be killed. And that is not good. We don't want that. That could be the unraveling of America as we know it. So what do we do, John? How do we start getting rid of the bad cops? In my case, I write a book. I'll be writing articles. Already have, pointing out the problem. And as more and more people become aware of it, they can actually wield two weapons that are just as good as fiction, if not better. Obviously, voting. You have to vote in the right people. Las Vegas has an opportunity right now, over the next year, to change the culture tremendously by electing an honest sheriff. There are several candidates running. You know, one of the best is Ted Moody, that just left. He just retired because he was so disgusted with the current sheriff, Sheriff Gillespie, that totally went against what the Use of Force Board had advised. They said, get rid of this officer, firing. And they had looked at all the facts. The guy had just shot somebody in the leg for no reason. And the sheriff just overturned it. Why? Because he's a gutless sheriff. Doug Gillespie is not a leader. He is led around by the nose by the Police Protective Association, the police union there in Vegas, which is very powerful. And they will defend a dirty, crooked, killer cop to the end. And, you know, yeah, they represent a lot of Metro cops, but they're also losing a lot of members. So use your vote, folks, across the nation. Get rid of these leaders that refuse to get rid of the killer cops. That's one. And the other thing is use your cameras, folks. Cameras have become, you know, ubiquitous. They're on our cell phones, and a lot of people are carrying cameras that also, you know, can record video and audio. And as you mentioned earlier, John, when these things happen, when a cop starts abusing somebody, they should be surrounded at a distance by people with cameras. And the power of that camera and the power of the written word together can reverse this trend of killer cops and the arrogance. Because there's one example. It happened in Hawthorne, California, just a few months ago. And it was caught on camera. And a cop, you know, took down this guy that was filming them as they were doing something, some traffic thing. And it's not against the law to film a cop, as long as you're not interfering with what he's doing. But, of course, the cops don't like that. They exert their authority, and they were arresting this guy. Well, the guy had a dog. The dog got out of the car, and the dog was, you know, trying to defend its master there. Did not try to bite anybody, but this cop quickly pulled out his gun and fired and killed the dog.
Yeah, I saw that. Shot the dog three times.
All caught on camera.
Oh, yeah.
The outrage of the citizens was such that not only the killer cop, but the other cops who were with him had to go into hiding and protective custody of some sort, because the community was ready to rip them apart. And in my view, rightly so. You know, well, what's going to happen when something similar to that ignites an absolute backlash? We're going to see cops killed on the streets because of their own stupidity, because of their own arrogance. Okay, cameras and the vote. Those are two very powerful weapons that every single citizen out there can and should be using to get a handle on these terrorists, the indigos that I talk about in the permit.
Yeah, you know, I remember that movie, V for Vendetta. That's what it took. That's an interesting little picture. I think there are two pictures that people should see. One of them is V for Vendetta. And, you know, a child got shot, and that's what did it. It was just a child in a little Guy Fawkes mask, and all of a sudden, that child is now shot. And that didn't go over well at all. But in the end, it was just a mass of people. They were not armed, and the armed ones just went, no, we're not going to engage, and we're not going to shoot them. Actually, it was suggested that the citizens are right. This has gone too far. Just let them through. And the other one is this movie with James Caan from a long time ago called Rollerball, where you're supposed to be part of a system. You're not supposed to be an individual. Just remember Patrick McGoohan and his defense of the right of the individual to be an individual and not become part of this big, insensitive machine. Got some more thoughts on that, but unfortunately they're a little bit larger than time will allow. So let's take our top of the hour break. A few commercials from our beloved sponsors, and get right back with you and our guest tonight, who hadn't been on since 09, William B. Scott, his latest book, The Permit. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.